Welcome to Mandates and Megaphones, hosted by Jeremy Maggs. Unpacking the politics, promises, and power plays behind the G20 summit.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mandates and Megaphones on MoneyWeb, brought to you in association with Standard Bank. I'm Jeremy Maggs. And this year, I don't need to tell you, South Africa holds the G20 and B20 stage like never before. And business, in many respects, is being asked to step up and help shape a global economic agenda, which is under real pressure. And let's tease that out a little bit in this episode. My guest is Richard Rivett-Carnac, who's Chief Executive Officer of South African Breweries, also a member of the B20 Advisory Council. And hopefully we're going to cut through some of the headlines and ask how South African companies can turn influence into real action, from building inclusive growth and driving sustainability to unlocking Africa's unique opportunities. So, Richard, a very warm welcome to you. Let's start with this. A lot emerging about the B20, the G20 being Africa's moment. What is your understanding of that?
So thanks, Jeremy. I think that's exactly what it is, right? We're obviously hosting the summit this year. And as a result of that, you know, South African business has really stepped up. We required, as the B20, to make recommendations to the G20 that will ultimately influence global trade, global business, but more importantly, African business, right? And so this is an opportunity. So what you see is 30% of all of the B20 Forum's teams are made up of South African business leaders who are actively involved in drafting fact-based recommendations that go to the G20 that are going to be important both for South Africa and for Africa and ultimately for the globe. So what we've seen is business leaders in South Africa really take that opportunity, really step up, step out of their daily lives in work, invest a lot of time and effort to make sure that what we do and what we recommend is going to make a tangible difference, because this is our first opportunity to do so.
Can you lift the curtain for me a little bit and take me into some of those discussions and the tone that was set, the mood that was created, and how much consensus and contestation there was? It must have been a fascinating process to go through.
Yeah, so
and exhausting, I imagine, too.
Yeah, no, that's right. So luckily, I wasn't actually involved in any of the task forces. So my job as part of the advisory council is now to advocate and ensure that those recommendations are accepted by the G20. So it's quite a process, the entire efforts that we're going through. I think that the reality is that each of the business leaders, and we've had senior CEOs from South African business running each of the different streams, right? And what it's meant is understanding where it's come from. So each year, each country hosts, they make recommendations. How do we take those recommendations? How do we keep the bulk of those so we don't break the momentum that's built year on year through the G20 and B20 process? But then how do we change that and make it relevant to what the goals are around sustainability, inclusive growth, and how do we make sure that those things are actionable as well? And what it's required is those business leaders really to immerse themselves in what each task force is looking to look at, right? To ensure that things are actionable and are fact-based, based on actual research that we understand, and things that actionable. I've said it a few times, and I'll say it again, to make sure that they're not just making recommendations, you know, that go from year to year and nothing comes from that.
So how worried are you that the recommendations, and there are many of them and we've discussed them on previous podcasts, will be turned into action, that otherwise there can just be a lot of spinning of wheels with no real tangible benefit?
Look, I think it's a real concern. If I'm honest, when I first got involved, one of my first questions was that, you know, how do we ensure that we monitor, that we track, that we measure, that what we're doing is actually implemented? This is an annual process, and so there's not a lot of time for implementation, which is why it was so important for us to have continuity from previous recommendations, but also to adjust them for the African context and for the current G20 geopolitical context that we're in today, right? So finding that balance is super important. And I think what we're saying now in the B20 is that for the first time, we're recommending strongly that we do track and monitor who is implementing these things, because often they are implemented by multilateral organizations, like World Trade Organization, for example, would take on some of these recommendations and drive them forward at a global level, right? Our ability to drive things globally in South Africa is obviously very limited, but we need to make sure the recommendations are relevant both in Africa and globally, but then can be moved forward. And so it is a concern, but it's something we've been very focused
on. And as a member of the advisory council, is it more carrot and less stick, or the other way around in that respect?
No, so it's very much more carrot, right? Mm. So I think the stick doesn't really exist, right? I mean, I think the reality is you need to make reality your friend. You know, we have the privilege of hosting this for 1 year. It then goes away. So, you know, I think the stick is you lose the stick, as it were, within a year. Mm. So it's much more important to spend the time and effort to make sure the recommendations you're putting forward are actionable and are right.
As the leader of a big listed company in South Africa, why was it important for SAB to step up and play a crucial role in this?
I think it's because of the opportunity that we have. The first time ever that South Africa hosts the B20 and the G20, we saw that both as an opportunity to really influence certain things that we think will ultimately help South Africa and Africa. And we also saw it as a responsibility to ensure that, you know, we work with government, who's ultimately responsible for hosting it, to ensure that it is a success. And we felt we didn't lean in as business into this, both in terms of mainly allocating our time, efforts, human resources into this effort, but also some financial assistance. You know, it's a global showcase, and we need to make sure that South Africa shows up and proves to the world how good we are at anything we set our minds to.
How difficult was it for business itself in South Africa to achieve consensus, given that often outside of an environment like this, you're arch rivals, you compete with each other?
No, I think very easy, Jeremy. I think
one common goal.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It was very simple, right? We put aside our local competitive nuances, and you know, it's a global platform. It's one common goal. Mm. It's we're all driving for the same thing. That's around growth, the right kind of growth. And so those weren't concerns at all.
Principal among the recommendations, what are you most bullish about?
So I'd say talk about a few things, right? I think that the finance lens, and I know that you've interviewed Sim, mm. who ran the finance piece of work. I think there's some very important things there around unlocking really infrastructure investments. We all know that Africa needs more infrastructure investment, not only in South Africa, but across the continent. We see that within our business as well, within the beer industry across Africa. Digitization, undoubtedly, you know, we see that as a big trend, and how do we get that right? How do we accelerate that in South Africa and across Africa? To ensure that we remain relevant on the global stage. And then a big piece around empowerment, right? So a big piece of what we did was around inclusion of women and SMEs in what we're doing. We see SMEs playing an enormous role across the African continent in our economies. So, for example, roughly 70% of agricultural is actually coming from small and smallholder farmers in Africa, right? So we need to ensure that growth and what we're trying to do and trying to build is inclusive.
And there's a critical link between two of those issues. One is digitization and the other is SMEs, because the one is not going to achieve the kind of success that we need to without the other. Yet the argument goes is that we're behind the curve in terms of adoption. How do you accelerate that digitization speed that we need to achieve so urgently?
Yeah, look, I think the speed is to probably accelerate the speed. I think one of the big dreams is around better public-private partnerships at scale, right? Rather than small scale efforts in terms of digitization? How do we really accelerate? And I don't have these answers, but how do we really accelerate a meaningful public-private partnership within digitization to really drive the access to the digital platforms that people need, especially SMEs? I think once they have it, I think people are amazing, right? They're very entrepreneurial. They'll work it out. They'll understand what to do with it. So it's, for me, it's very much about that access and I think meaningful large-scale public-private partnerships to drive that is probably the answer.
Given that so often the continent of Africa and South Africa, for that matter, are seen as high-risk investment environments, how difficult is it going to be to make sure that the B20's recommendations translate into tangible opportunities, particularly for the private sector? You seem to be on the back foot all the time in that respect.
Yeah, so I'd actually disagree with that, right? So you're 100% right. You know, it is risky doing business in Africa. We're very fortunate at SAB. You know, we've got a lot of experience doing business across the continent. And I would say, actually, the opportunities that the continent gives us in terms of growth, population growth, if further access to market will really drive economic growth. It's not linear, so it's a very bumpy ride. But the long term, we've been doing this for 30 years now across the African continent. The long term is undeniable, right? The curve is up, and if you have the patience and the willingness and the opportunity to invest, the opportunity is there. And the rest of the world is seeing this, right? There's declining populations in most continents across the world now, and growth is hard to come by, and there is real growth in Africa. So it's
providing you're prepared to be patient. Not all investors have that luxury, though.
That's right, but it can't all be easy, right? So you absolutely have to be patient, do the right things, build your businesses in the right way, but the opportunity is undoubtedly there.
Maybe speaking from your company's own experience, you mentioned the importance of SMEs in terms of continental growth. How can large corporates such as yourself better partner with smaller and more informal enterprises?
So I think there are two ways, Jeremy. The one is, and I would say the most important one, is the use of our supply chain, our procurement muscle, right? We procure an amazing amount of things across South Africa and the continent. So we have we can provide access to market, right? What's difficult is it's often easier to give that access to big corporations, right? So what we've learned over time is you need to be very deliberate about how you empower SMEs to get access to your supply chain through providing commitments over the medium, longer term in terms of access to you, and then working with them to give them the skills and capabilities to compete with the bigger companies in terms of quality and price, right? So what we've learned is you need to do both. You need to provide access, and with the certainty of access, they will often get access to capital and things that are required in order to get into your supply chain. But you also need to ensure that they can produce things at the right quality at the right price, because if they don't do that consistently over time, they will find it very difficult to remain in big corporation supply chains. So that's the first one. The second one is, obviously, we have a very diverse customer base, right? And we are very focused on ensuring not only do our big customers thrive and grow, but our small customers thrive and grow. And that, if I can be honest, is often self-serving. We don't want the markets to consolidate. And so we invest a lot of time in training, in providing business opportunities to our smaller customers who are often pivotal in their respective communities to ensure that they are thriving, they are hiring, and the multiplier effect of having lots of small customers that are being successful on the broader economy is significant.
Back to the word you used earlier, though, it requires a huge amount of patience, and not all corporates are prepared to invest the time or the effort in that, I guess.
I probably disagree with you, Jeremy.
Please do. Yeah.
I think that we're here for the long term, right? I mean, we think SAB, we're lucky enough to be celebrating 130 years this year. We've been around for 130 years. We haven't done that through through thinking short term, right? And I think if you spoke to any leader in South Africa who's running a business that's been around a long time, they're very much are worried about the short term impact on P&Ls, but very, very focused on the long term. What is the right thing to do for the long term? And we know that, you know, it's a very tough operating environment. You need to be resilient. We know that things come and the business environment changes, right? But the fundamental belief in the opportunity in South Africa and on the continent is there, right? So that's why you need to build for the long term.
And how do you take that philosophy of inclusive growth, and I absolutely understand what you're saying, and put that on the G20 world stage? How do you make that case to them?
Well, so, and I've touched on it, so we've made things like inclusion of women, so women empowerment, SMEs, as part of all of the different pillars. How do we ensure that is included in all of that? How do we ensure that the barriers that are stopping inclusive growth, and in Africa, the one example I'd bring is around access to markets in terms of borders, geographies, right? Rather than operating as individual countries on the African continent, how do we provide broader access? How do we beneficiate the minerals we have, right? So how do we make more of what we are doing? We've tried to include that and make that as central to what we're doing. And big part of that was a big inclusion of women on all of the task force. About 44% of all of the task force included women to ensure that we got that balance.
And
right.
Do you think that's going to be a difficult case to sell to the G20 that might have other, perhaps more imperious motives in terms of business, and maybe are not as altruistic as you're sounding to me?
Yes and no. So I think, as I said, we've taken a large part of what we've done, about 70%, is a continuation from previous G20s and B20s, right? So a lot of these principles were very similar in Brazil, in India, and so you have broad alignment already from the G20, kind of at a high level on some of these things. And obviously, we have a big influence, 30% South Africans in driving these policy recommendations within the... But that means 70% aren't South African, right? So you have a very big influence globally and representation from all of the Gs in terms of what we are recommending. So I think it's never easy, these things, right? And the nuances we're going to have to see. Part of my job now is to advocate the acceptance of these recommendations from the B20 to the G20. But I think the we haven't changed the base that much, and these nuances we hope they accept.
And let me pivot slightly and ask you how difficult that job is when public trust in so many institutions is fragile.
So I think to a degree you're confusing issues here, if I may say that. Let me address that first. So I agree with you. I think there is an immense frustration around the ability for certain institutions within government to deliver what the people of our country need, right? So we're now pivoting a little bit to South Africa, right? I think, though, that business has invested a lot of time and effort into working with government to try and fix some of the big issues we're facing. I would point to the CEO initiative as the best example of that.
And paying dividends.
And absolutely paying dividends. So decided to tackle power, Eskom, decided to tackle security, decided to tackle transport, right? We've seen the most obvious win would be Eskom and the reductions and the stopping of load shedding.
And a seeming turnaround at Transnet.
Absolutely. And Transnet is undoubtedly on its way. And we've seen there that, and at the start, a lot of criticism around how does business work with government on initiatives like this. We found a governance structure that really works, that ensures that business does what business should do in this environment and government does what government does. And that support structure really has worked, and it's been about business putting forward often human resources, again, a lot of human resource capital, people, but also money, but working with government and government absolutely playing ball in terms of changing regulations where required, in enabling an environment where, you know, we can get things moving. So I think that business's role in eroding that mistrust is that we do have a role to play in really driving things forward, and we have capabilities that government doesn't have, for different reasons, right? And we just need to be deliberate about capacitating those partnerships to make sure that they work, and they work quickly, because we've got problems that need to be addressed.
You've used the word on a couple of occasions, deliberate. What does that mean?
For me, I think it's firstly about choosing what you are going to get involved in to fix or change, rather than trying to do...
You can't throw everything at the wall and hope that something sticks.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, as difficult as it is to say, the reality is we have lots of problems. You fix them one at a time, in my experience, right? You go, what is the most important, what is the most pressing issues that we face? Let's address those, and then we can prioritize the next pieces of the puzzle later. I think the CEO initiative, again, is a good example of that. It was three, I think there was 100% agreement between everyone that these were the three things we needed to look at, right? And we were deliberate about looking at those three things first, right? And then once we're comfortable those are on the right track, you know, we can then move to the next things. But in life, personal, business, you always need to prioritize in order to make effective quick change.
And I'm glad you used the word prioritize. Is there among those recommendations, and you've referred to digitization, you've talked about the importance of inclusive growth, you've spoken about the importance of inclusivity, but is there a single recommendation that has the greatest potential, in your opinion, to unlock that real inclusive growth on the continent that you've been referring to? Something that you really should, or the G20 should be given its absolute focus to?
So my personal view on this, it's a great question. My personal view would probably be digitization, right? So, and let me explain why. So I believe as South Africans, as South African companies, we're a lot better than we give ourselves credit for. We're actually very, very good. I'm lucky enough to work in a global organization, and I can give you many examples of where South Africa is the leader in many of the things we do when we benchmark ourselves against the US, Europe, China, South America, many different continents. We often, I think, are undercall how good we are at doing things. I think so. The talent, the infrastructure we have specifically in South Africa, our ability to innovate, our ability to remain relevant is, I think, ingrained in South Africa. Our resilience is a massive part of that as well. We intuitively work very, very hard. But the digital piece, for me, is where we can get left behind despite all of those great attributes that we have, right? So for me, the biggest bet must be, how do we ensure that we remain relevant from a digital footprint, access, education, training, all of those things, because I think that is somewhere that we can get left behind very quickly, and then it'll be very difficult to catch up.
There was an interesting phrase that came out of last week which is kind of resonating with me, and it was, Africa is not asking for charity, but offering leadership. It's worth repeating. Africa is not asking for charity, it's offering leadership. What message, and this is the last question, what message do you think international investors might want to take from a statement like that? Because I think in many respects that kind of summarizes this entire conversation.
I think that's a great, I like that a lot. And I think that's right. I think the message is we don't need a hand up, right? We are, come to Africa, come and have a look and see what we're doing and see how good we are at so many different things and see how we are able to build successful companies that move into Africa, that move globally from what we have, a very difficult base sometimes. Come and see how good we are and how much we can teach you rather than the other way around.
And sitting in the belly of the beast as you are at the moment, you're bullish about outcomes at the end of November.
Yes, I am. If I am bullish. I think our recommendations are solid. I think they're focused. I think we've tried to ensure that we don't cast the net too wide in terms of what we're trying to achieve. So I am bullish that things will be taken forward. And I'm also bullish about the future for South Africa and Africa.
It's a great way to end this conversation. It brings us to the end of this episode of Mandates and Megaphones. My thanks to Richard Rivett-Carnac for joining us and for his insights into how business can push beyond the rhetoric and help shape outcomes in this matter. As he said, and maybe just worth repeating, South Africa has a real chance to show that business can lead with both ambition, but perhaps more importantly, with responsibility. And if we deliver, this could be the moment for Africa as it shifts from the margins of global economic debate and takes center stage. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Mandates and Megaphones. You can find more episodes on moneyweb.co.za.